The following program may contain material that is unsuitable for some audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Aftermath Radio should not be considered a substitute for services provided by a licensed mental health professional. Good afternoon and welcome to Aftermath Radio, brought to you live from the K-Beach radio station at Cal State Long Beach.
So I'm having headphone issues today. It's because my hair is extra spiky because I need a haircut. And so I don't know whether to do the headphones like backwards like this. Or forwards like this.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Forwards looks so much better.
Yeah, I notice actually when we do leave that you have this like flat.
A flat spot in the faux hawk. Yeah. I don't know. But they don't really make headphones for people with my hairdo.
They need to think of something.
Yeah. Back in the day, we'd rock it like this.
Yeah, like the DJs.
I mean? But then
do.
I got to hold it, and that's not fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is what I'm going to do. I'll just have to.
Figure it out.
Anyway, Aftermath Radio, Dr. Robert Shug, Assistant Professor of Criminal Justice and Forensic Psychology here at Long Beach State, where we talk about all things psychopathic. You can talk to us if only you call area code 562-912-3541. That's 562-912-3541. Skype us at aftermath.radio. And you have the computer up, right?
I do, but we are not on Skype just yet because we are preparing other items.
Ah. Okay. So you're saying we're a little shorthanded here?
No, after this segment, Skype will be up and running.
Okay. So if someone tries to Skype now, they'll get what? The busy signal?
They will get the offline
What kind
status.
Of message are we sending?
Wait. Maybe I can get on it right now.
Okay. Aftermath Radio should never be offline.
I thought we never were. I thought we were like a 24/7 operation. And this is news to me. I never got that memo. You can Skype us, but not right now, at aftermath.radio. Email us at aftermathradio@kbeach.com. And as always, go to our website, aftermathradio.org. In the lower left-hand corner is a link marked radio where all of our podcasts are archived for your listening pleasure. And they are actually all there now because I finished them all up over the weekend.
Well, I know for sure you had an hour last week.
On Monday so at
4.
Because we weren't here live. Yeah. Right. So there's that. Yeah, no, I just had to do Dr. Jill Rickey's show, and I finished that one up, and it's up there. And we actually replayed the interview with Dr. Robert Hare last week while you two were in New York City.
We were.
Yes, we were.
And so today, a couple things I want to do. One thing I am noticing right off the bat, there are a couple of items left over here on the table. One is this Dave and Buster's, was it a hacky sack or a stress ball?
I thought it was a stress ball.
What is that?
Those have never helped me.
I think it's a hacky sack. Now, we already have one item in the Aftermath Radio prize vault, right? I showed you that item, right? The
bright orange shirt.
The bright
so
orange
shirt. So I know Skype is up and running.
Excellent. Very good. What's the organization we run, the Honor Society?
I'm not telling you. You should know this.
Alpha Phi Sigma.
There you go.
The headquarters, maybe I shouldn't be saying this in case they're listening to me over there, but the headquarters sent me a T-shirt. And it has all of the chapters of Alpha Phi Sigma, which is the Criminal Justice Honor Society. And there's like what? How many would you say, GGB? Like hundreds?
Yeah, you know their 70th anniversary was at ACJS in New York.
Oh, see, there you go. So I have this bright orange shirt with all of these chapters on the back, like, you know, and it looks like a Caltrans shirt, like if I were out picking up trash on the freeway because I did something wrong. You know? I mean, it looks like
I
that.
I hope you get an so email. Like,
I'm probably going to get an email to that. So why would I ever need that, right? So I graciously donated it to the Aftermath Radio Prize Vault, and I'm thinking maybe this will go in there as well.
We're going to steal from Long
it's not
Beach
really
Radio.
Is it stealing, though?
Does it belong to you?
Well, like this, I feel like this space is mine right now from 4 to 5 on Mondays here on K-Beach. Right?
Okay, so then let's say if it's here 2 Mondays from 4 to 5 from now.
So that begs the question. If I were to sort of stash it somewhere, like does that count? Like I know what you're saying. Give the person a chance to claim it.
Like an Easter egg hunt.
Yeah.
With a Dave and Buster's.
Like a hacky sack hunt, I suppose. Right? And then there is a stack of K-Beach business cards.
Oh, those are free.
These are free?
Taking.
Okay, so why are these free and this is not? That's all I'm saying.
If it was a K Beach stress ball, then maybe.
We need K Beach stress balls, don't we?
I think wow. so.
I think an Aftermath Radio stress ball would be a good idea for merchandising.
Absolutely.
I think that's a really good, you need to write that down now.
Why? What are you saying?
Because I will forget, and I don't know if you'll remember. I thought that's what you went to go do, so.
Write it down.
Yeah, I thought you were about to write
no.
it down.
Okay. You can't even see me from there.
Yes,
can you?
I can see your hand.
Oh, okay.
Like such a creeper. See your hand.
All right, so maybe we should do something meaningful here, I guess. So you guys were in New York City last week.
Yeah.
What was going on? Tell us what happened.
Gigi.
So both Chantal and I had our conference or our research thesis presentations, and mine was on Wednesday of last week. Last week, and hers was on Thursday, and I think they went rather well.
Any
more details?
Well, just to kind of fill everyone in, this is a research conference, meaning grad students and researchers, excuse me, will go there. They typically are once a year for these organizations, right?
Yes.
And they're typically in these really cool places, like yours was in New York City, and we went to Washington, D.C. for a different organization last November. So you're basically around a bunch of other academics and researchers and grad students, and everyone goes there to present their research. So there's a long sort of tradition of this thing going way, way, way back. And so you're in a, what, large room, small room?
Semi-decent sized room, I would say.
Your room was like triple the size of my room.
That's what happened at WSC.
Mm. I prefer a small room.
Yeah, so would I.
Because less people will fit in there?
It's just, well, I don't know.
It's not like any of our rooms were filled by any
I prefer, seriously, I think I prefer a smaller room with like packed.
Really?
Yeah, like overflowing.
You want to feel that important.
I want to feel like a rock star, yes.
I think I'd prefer a small room with no
with nobody
one.
In it.
Right. Or a bunch of people in their underwears, which we discussed.
Sometimes that works, right? Did you have to do that this time around?
No.
No?
Not at all.
How many people do you think you got in your audience?
I counted it because someone asked me. 17.
17 ain't bad, actually.
Well, one of them was Dr. Perrone.
Oh, okay.
And another one was Gigi.
So there goes 2 out of 17.
Gigi, what was your draw? How many?
I don't know. My room was bigger, but I think mine had like at least 30 people in there. It was, a larger turnout than I expected, that's for sure.
Well, that's good. Well, they both went well. And then you guys, did you get some downtime in the city of the
What do you mean
Big
by
Apple?
Downtime? You mean lots of uptime? There was no relaxation here. This was vacation on drugs.
You got time away from the conference.
That's an understatement.
Which panels did you guys go to? That's what you should be asking.
Well, one thing I was thinking is because we were supposed to have Dr. Tracy Tolbert on today.
Right.
But that was a bit of a scheduling snafu on my part. I'm assuming, right? But I was going to put you both on the spot and see if you saw any panels on juvenile psychopathy because that's what she's going to talk about in 2 weeks.
Do you know what Gigi's thesis is on?
It's not on juvenile psychopathy, but you know I'm a...
You're a juvenile at heart?
Research interests.
That's your research interest.
Yes.
So there you go. Well, so in 2 weeks when Dr. Tracy Tolbert is on talking about juvenile psychopathy, you will be front and center.
I will come with my questions prepared.
Excellent. So I was going to put you on the spot. So did you happen to see any panels on that?
No.
Not so much?
No, not so much.
Not so much at all.
All right. Let's see. What else was I going to talk about? While you were gone, so we did a pre-recorded show. I'm getting a phone call on the line from someone from Canada, and they never leave a message, and I'm just sort of want to do a friendly encouragement statement to leave a message this time, next time you call.
Or email.
Or an email, if that's easier, yeah.
This has nothing to do with the calls you're receiving, but somebody has been calling me consistently and leaving no voicemails, and it is driving me insane.
Do they live in Canada?
Are they from Canada?
Maybe that's a Canadian thing.
No, I don't know, but it's
the
weird.
Same
that
number,
same number, consistently.
That's just a stalker. That's all that
it's
is.
It's been like a week.
Nothing to worry about. Why are you tripping, girl? Anyway. Yeah, so feel free to – the voicemail is yours, the listeners, right? So feel free to use it, and we check it all the time. And I actually get an email every time someone leaves a Skype voicemail, so I'm all over that.
Oh, wow. Great job.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And so are we tweeting right now? Do we tweet yet?
Oh, that's another thing. What
are you doing?
Trying to multitask here today.
You were just doing no tasking there a second ago.
No.
What do you mean multitasking? You need to do a task
from zero
before
to
you can multitask.
called you out.
I have four tabs.
Breathing
open.
Is not a task. You're expected to. Do we have the tweet sound effect? Oh, come on. Oh, my gosh. There we go. Okay, so.
I only have two hands.
Tell us about Twitter.
Oh, I'm tweeting right now.
Okay, what are you going to tweet?
What would you like me to tweet?
Well, I'll get an email that lets me know that you're tweeting, and it'll tell me what it is anyway. Tweet something, I don't know, a whimsical, something funny, something entertaining.
So do you want to remind our listeners that next week we don't?
Next week is spring break, so mm-hmm. we will not be here. Nobody will be here. I'm assuming they'll play some sort of pre-recorded something, right? But I'm not going to come down here to give them a podcast either.
No.
So it's I don't know necessary. What you're going to hear next week. But the week after, we'll have Dr. Tracy Tolbert talking about juvenile psychopathy. So that'll be cool. So we get kind of like 2 weeks off. It would have been cool if they were 2 weeks off in a row, right?
Why?
I just would have felt a little more relaxing.
Really?
This like on again, off again thing. I don't know. It just doesn't work for me.
Yeah. You know what? We were talking about if we had scheduled our fun time in New York
mm-hmm.
properly.
And you'd feel you didn't do that.
Well, because we had, you know, our first weekend there was all fun and games, and then it was like, okay, time to buckle down for the conference, which was a lot harder than I think that if we had gone into it, gotten the conference over with, and then...
I 100% agree, and yeah. I don't know why we did it the way we did. I still...
There was a reason.
I just don't know
what it
is.
There was a method to your madness,
yeah,
wasn't there?
Yeah, there always is, but it's hard for us to remember.
Well, I do want to say this. While you two were gallivanting around the Big Apple, I was here holding down the fort at Aftermath Radio Command Center, and I started on a new promo because there was an email from management saying we need to come up with a new promo.
Why?
Yeah.
They don't like us.
Is it outdated?
Not just us, everybody. So it wasn't focused on us, right? So I started working on it, and what I'm doing is like kind of a montage type of promo.
Ooh.
You know what I mean? Like with different bits from all the folks we've interviewed and whatnot. And so I need for you to, I want to make yours like kind of like a blooper reel type of contribution. So I need
Great.
You to say something within the next, I don't know, 30 seconds, like kind of witty, but at the same time.
No pressure there.
No pressure at all.
Or somewhere over the course of the show, like do an intentional blooper.
Intentional, then it's not a blooper.
Like one, I remember you one time actually tweeting because we were mentioning Twitter and you
Twitter.
Twitter.
Blooper for Shug.
Twitter and you tweeted like a bird and I couldn't find it.
Oh, yeah,
remember that? When was that?
I couldn't find it. You made the sound effect before we had.
Let's try it. So what would be
the,
yeah. So what was your sound effect before that?
Tweet?
Something. I don't.
You guys, I don't think that.
You did it with a little more enthusiasm last time.
Tweet.
All right. That'll do. Oh, Gigi's giving me the wrap-up sign. So I'll try to get that together this week. It's about probably a third of the way done. It's a lot of work going back and like finding like
good stuff.
Yeah, from all the good work that we've done. Well, it's like too much good stuff.
I'm trying to think of usually this first segment. I really have to say what it's called. This
right.
first segment holds a lot of those, you know, moments.
A lot of good gems, mm-hmm. as radio gems. And you're going to pull the soundproofing off the wall if you keep doing that.
I don't know why I like to touch it.
Some sort
so
of weird
much.
Tick you have, right? All right, should we go to commercial?
Yes.
Aftermath Radio, we'll be right back after this here on K-Beach.
Hi, my name is Bob, and I'm a psychopath.
Hi, Bob!
Do you know what a psychopath is? Do you have one in your life? How would you know? Join Dr. Robert Shug Mondays at 4 p.m. for Aftermath Radio and get the facts about psychopathy.
We are back. Did you turn on the volume?
Testing.
It feels like it went down. That's better.
How did you call me out on that? I was trying to be a little...
I'm all seeing. I'm omniscient. That's the word, right?
What's omnipotent then?
That means I'm all powerful. Knowing. No, oh. All knowing is
omniscient.
What I just said. Omniscient. There you go.
So what's all seeing? eyeballs.
Omnivision. I don't know. Aftermath Radio, if you would like to speak with us. Actually, I don't know that your mic is on. It doesn't sound like it's...
You see people? You
I
see?
Can hear her totally fine.
But I hear like she's in the room. I don't know. Maybe you could work with that. start turning some knobs there. I'll give the contact information. If you'd like to speak to us, area code 562-912-3541. That's not the one. 562-912-3541. Skype us at aftermath.radio. Email us at aftermathradio@kbeach.com. And as always, go to our website, aftermathradio.org. Lower left-hand corner is the link to all our podcasts, which are archived for you, the listener. Yeah, it just doesn't sound as rocking as it did, like, the last segment.
You know what's weird is what just happened right now was for her mic, but it affected yours.
Like, test your mic. Say
testing
something.
1, 2, 3.
I guess it's coming through. I mean, it just doesn't sound.
I can't hear myself or you lovely people.
Oh, okay. You can't hear now when I turn this one? Well, you need to talk.
Hi. This is Chantal.
Can you hear it now?
I can hear you a lot. Oh, there it is. Hi.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. Good. We'll stick with that then.
Great.
Okay. So I wanted to talk about, let's see. So this whole thing now, well, actually what got me going on this is last week while you guys were gone, in the news out here in the LA area, in Orange County, there was a guy named Itzcoatl Ocampo who killed, he's a serial killer. He killed, you want to tell us about him, G? I mean, I'm just sort of off the top of my head. I think six people, yeah?
Yeah, six people, four homeless men, I believe, and one, his former high school classmate and his classmate's mother.
Okay, yeah. And this was a big story out here mm-hmm. in Orange County, and it had this like total kind of Hollywood finish where some guy just sees him like his last victim. Like he sees the murder happen and a random guy sees it happening and chases the guy to like a apartment complex or a trailer park or something. And the police catch him. That's how he gets caught. An innocent bystander. So who are you talking to?
Dominic's giving us the thumbs up.
Oh, it's all good. It's fine. We were just complaining then.
that's the headphone update right there for you. So certainly anytime there's some sort of serial crime going on in your area, you pay attention. But this was particularly interesting to me just because of the work that I do. Anyway, so when this first came out, the guy ends up being like an Iraqi war veteran or an Afghanistan war veteran, or which was it, G? Did you get that information? And it's okay if you didn't.
He was a former Marine, I believe. This is from Associated Press that I'm...
Right. So the go-to sort of point after that was, the guy's got PTSD. And he snapped, and this is what he did. And I wanted to spend some time today talking about this whole connection between PTSD and violence, because we're seeing now that there's this other case in Afghanistan, right? And this just happened last week.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy's name?
Bales, Robert Bales.
Okay, and what did he do?
Sorry, this is not a lot.
I know, it is
matter.
It's really a funny story.
He went into a nearby village and shot a bunch of women and children. I believe the total number was 16, mm-hmm. and 11 were from the same family.
Right.
And it
seems totally unprovoked, and it's kind of a big thing over there right now. They immediately whisk him away to, like, you know, out of country. I think he's in Kansas right now, which is a whole other deal. But right after this happened, I remember thinking, okay, here we go again. This is going to be the next PTSD war veteran guy that they're going to, you know, that's what they're going to pin it on.
Right.
And sure enough, that's what we're starting to hear.
This was his fourth tour. He'd been serving since after 9/11.
Right. Now, I think what ends up happening is we immediately go to this PTSD sort of defense, if you will, or at least explanation. PTSD is post-traumatic stress disorder, right? So in the DSM, which is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, PTSD is an anxiety disorder. Right. And usually it develops after exposure to any event that results in psychological trauma. And I'm reading basically word for word here. The event might involve the threat of death to oneself or someone else, to one's own or someone else's physical, sexual or psychological integrity, which overwhelms the individual's ability to cope. And typically symptoms are re-experiencing the original trauma through flashbacks or nightmares. Avoidance of stimuli associated with the trauma and increased arousal, such as difficulty sleeping, anger, hypervigilance, like almost like a paranoia. You know, you're always sort of looking over your shoulder or whatever. And you have to have these for at least a month, you know, and after some sort of traumatic event. So, and we've talked about PTSD for years and years in the psychiatric literature as it relates to folks who are in combat. They used to call it war neuroses and shell shock. It's had different names, and now it's called this PTSD thing. And You know, and what scares me is that this become like, so there's this whole generation really of soldiers coming back from all these different combat situations who, and we're obviously going to see PTSD rates of PTSD. You know, I don't know if they're going to increase necessarily, but we certainly are going to see it. And the minute some veteran commits some act of violence, that seems to be the place that A, the media wants to go to explain it, and B, defense attorneys want to go, because there have been insanity defenses, successful insanity defenses based on a diagnosis of PTSD.
Really?
Yes. And actually, I was doing a bit of other research this past week on this connection, and the New York Times did a really cool article. I just came across this. This was published in 2008, and it was a series called War Torn, and the title of this particular article was Across America, Deadly Echoes of Foreign Battles, and it basically talks about these different cases of war veterans who engage in extreme act of violence. And here's an example of a guy who, his name is Matthew Seppi, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that name correctly or not, who is, let's see, in 2005, he's a 20-year-old Iraq combat veteran, headed out to a 7-Eleven in Las Vegas neighborhood, which I guess was sort of a bad neighborhood of Las Vegas, where he'd settled after leaving the Army. He goes there. I guess he goes into the store. On his way in, he's sort of confronted by some gang members who are in the alley next door. And he ends up, I guess for some reason, he had an AK-47 tucked underneath a trench coat.
Oh.
According to this, they don't really explain why that happened, but I guess these gang members attacked him, and he snapped. He went ballistic. He killed them, and as he was doing so, was screaming things like, you know, like, who's engaging me? Like, using sort of military terminology, and so it literally seemed like he was back in Iraq in the middle of battle in that moment, right?
How long ago was this?
This was in 2005.
Okay.
Actually, he killed one gang member, and the other one was wounded. With his rifle raised, he crept home, loaded 180 rounds of ammunition into his car, and drove until police lights flashed behind him. And then when they catch him, he says to the police, "Who did I take fire from?" He's wearing army camouflage pants, and he talks about how he engaged the targets and this, that, and the other. Yeah, so I mean, like, something like that. It's like, wow, that kind of, this guy's going through something related to some sort of war experience. Now, the thing with Ocampo is originally, and I got 6 minutes here, I need to be economic with my time. Originally, that's what they were talking about. This guy was a veteran, right? So must have PTSD. So, Gigi, what did they find out this past week about Ocampo here in Orange County?
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think this is what you're trying to get at. That Detective Darren Wyatt said, he, referring to Ocampo, saying he entered the Marine Corps with the purpose of seeing combat and becoming a killer. He felt in order to become a real Marine, he needed to kill.
Mm-hmm. Right. So it turns out now we've had some documents released. I'm not sure who released them. But this guy didn't just snap. And I actually was wondering when this was first going down and we first caught him about how methodical this guy was in planning these offenses and targeting homeless, you know, which tend to be a more sort of vulnerable population anyway. That was this. I mean, like, I can understand, you know, sort of going crazy. Maybe was it his school buddy, or who was it he first killed?
Former high school friend.
He kills his high school friend and I guess his mom. So that I can get if the guy maybe has some sort of PTSD reaction during some sort of interaction there. But then to go out and stalk homeless people didn't make sense to me. It didn't sound like someone in the midst of in the throes of a PTSD thing, kind of like this guy we just talked about in Las Vegas, who, for whatever reason, is walking around town with his AK-47 under a trench coat, but gets confronted by gang members and then kind of loses it, right? So, yeah, and this just comes out that the guy joined the Marines, turns out, because he wanted to kill people. He wanted to learn how to kill people. And he specifically wanted to kill 16 victims, mm-hmm. right, G? Yeah. Because, and I learned this from another source, that he wanted to be like Charles Whitman, the clock tower shooter from 1966 from the University of Texas, I think it was. Yeah.
University of Texas.
Right. So, which to me speaks more and more to a person, you know, this, maybe it's moving away from PTSD and moving more into something like psychopathy. And I'm not saying that Ocampo is a psychopath, but I mean, someone who says, "I joined the military to learn how to kill people and then sort of stalks and kills, you know, almost a half dozen very vulnerable individuals. To me, that's speaking more and more to some. And I mean, I'm not making a formal diagnosis, of course. Do we need to play the we'll do it later.
Yes,
but you know, that's a lack of conscience there. I'm thinking, and I really do. I'm interested in learning more and more about this Ocampo guy. And so right now, I'm hypothesizing that maybe this guy has some serious psychopathic features, and maybe it turns out that he is a psychopath. I don't know, but the whole PTSD thing, I think, needs to not be the go-to point when it comes to these cases. Now, I did a little bit of digging in the scientific literature, and it does look like there is some evidence that there's a link between PTSD and violence. So we can't totally move away from that. But this is an article by Emma Barrett and colleagues. This came out in 2011 in a journal called Addictive Behaviors. It's called Hurt People Who Hurt People: Violence Amongst Individuals with Comorbid Substance Use Disorder and Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder. And so there's a little bit of a review in here. It says individuals with PTSD are significantly more likely to report aggression compared to those without. PTSD has also been shown to be related to arrest and incarceration for violent offenses. Particularly with violent offenders, 7 times more likely to have PTSD compared to the general population. However, that last figure I looked at, and that was actually a sample of women who were victimized by intimate partner violence. So it's a little bit misleading. They may themselves have been traumatized. And some of the theories that explain it might be sort of the cycle of violence. You know, you experience some sort of trauma, and that sort of predicts your future behavior. Other studies have shown this kind of survivor mode, where people with PTSD have a sort of lowered threshold for perceiving situations as threats. And so they kind of go into that attack mode more quickly than the rest of us might. And then there's a fear avoidance theory that explains some folks with PTSD may have feelings of anger and express physical aggression in order to avoid intrusive fear-related thoughts and feelings brought on by reminders of the trauma. So there does seem to be some work that indicates a link. However, one thing I did notice, and we have 1 minute here, is the literature on PTSD and violence is very slim from what I could see. It focuses mainly on victims and not so much on perpetrators with PTSD. So really interesting for me to see this unfold. I'm really kind of excited. I'm not excited about it happening, but about sort of opportunities to explain why it happens. And ultimately, you know, is this PTSD that we're dealing with or something more sinister underlying it, like maybe perhaps psychopathy? Anyway, that was my thoughts on that. Do you guys want to add anything?
I think this is a good time to play the disclaimer.
Let's play the acid rock disclaimer. Then we'll go to break. Aftermath Radio. We'll be right back after this.
Though you cannot make a conclusive diagnosis of psychopathy without adequate interview and file information, several of the behaviors reported in this case seem broadly consistent with traits and characteristics commonly associated with psychopathy. None of the comments made here should be interpreted as a formal diagnosis based on an appropriate psychopathy assessment.
Hi, my name is Bob, and I'm a psychopath.
Hi, Bob!
Bob!
Do you know what a psychopath is? Do you have one in your life? How would you know? Join Dr. Robert Shugg Mondays at 4 p.m. for Aftermath Radio and get the facts about psychopathy.
Aftermath Radio, we're back. If you'd like to speak with me, Dr. Robert Shugg, Assistant Professor of Criminal Justice and Forensic Psychology here on Aftermath Radio, you can reach me and the girls at area code 562-912-3541. That's 562-912-3541. You can Skype us at aftermath.radio, email us at aftermathradio@kbeach.com, and as always, go to our website, aftermathradio.org, where there's a bunch of great resources for survivors and folks interested in psychopathy research, as well as our podcast. And just before we go on with the caller, I did get an email here from a listener, which I will answer at the end of this segment. So emailing listener, just hold on. I'll get to your question in a minute. But in the meantime, we have on the line Joyce Alexander. Joyce, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Excellent. So Joyce is a retired registered nurse practitioner whose son Patrick is in prison in Texas for killing Jessica Witt, a 17-year-old girl, in cold blood back in January of 1992. And we've had Joyce on the show, I think, two times already, maybe more. Fascinating, fascinating story. We're always very pleased to have her on, and we've got her today. So, and actually, just full disclosure, I did call Joyce last minute because we had some scheduling problems, and Joyce came through for us. Right, Joyce?
Yeah, thanks. No problem.
But like I said before, you're our go-to. If we have a problem, you're our go-to girl, right?
I'll give you a little background. Patrick was an ideal child up until puberty. And at puberty, he started various and sundry thieving and, you know, car theft, joyriding. He stole my car and robbed our friend's business with it, took all their computers and shut them down, and I turned him into the cops.
Right.
And, you know, if it had been your son and I knew it, I'd have turned him in, so, you know, I turned mine in.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a juvenile, so it wouldn't have been any big deal, but he has held a grudge against me ever since. And so, after he got out of the trouble with the theft at 17, he took off. I didn't see him again until about 5 months later. He was convicted of a home invasion thing with some juveniles, and he got 5 years. He did two and convinced me and my husband that he wanted to come home, but at the last minute, he didn't. He went to my husband's niece's house and convinced her that he was an abused child and his parents didn't understand him and, you know, he just needed somebody to love him and take care of him.
Right.
Well, it wasn't but another 5 months that he had been involved in some things with Jessica Witt that were illegal. You know, nothing all that big, some credit card stuff, but he would have gone back to prison. And she ratted him out.
Mm.
And that was kind of a bad thing for her to do because he killed her in cold blood. Planned it for 2 days or at least 2 days, maybe longer, in advance, and actually told some of his friends what he planned to do. And I don't know if you read the police report that I sent you after the last time I was here.
Yeah, I did.
But, you know, I can't believe that these people didn't tell somebody that he planned to kill somebody.
Yeah, that was amazing.
But, yes, it really is. But, anyway, I eventually, even after he killed this girl, I got sucked back in. I went into denial. Oh, he did it, but he's sorry. And a few years ago, I realized on a visit to him that he wasn't sorry. He was proud of what he did. She deserved it. She deserved to die. She turned him into the cops. Well, if she deserved to die, what did that mean about how he thought about me?
Mm-hmm.
And so I realized that if he had come home, it would probably have been me that was dead and not Jessica. And believe it or not, I've actually got a little survivor's guilt over that.
Oh, I bet you do, yeah.
And I didn't realize that until a few months ago, that I actually do have some survivor's guilt over the fact that if he had come home, she wouldn't be dead. But it would be me, because he had no intention of going straight. None. And so, you know, I think about the denial that we let ourselves go into and how denial is such a protective emotion under certain circumstances. If there's something happens that's too big for you to eat in one chunk, you can stay in denial for a little while until you can start to nibble away at it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you stay in denial long term, it keeps you from taking any action to fix it or to accept it. And I think psychopaths count on us when we start to see behind their mask to stay in that denial so that they can continue to use us.
Now, at what point with your son did you notice things weren't as they should be?
Well, I had gone down to see him, And I can't remember exactly what the date was. My short-term memory is pretty bad. But anyway, I went down to see him, and my son David and I were there. And he was trying to convince me to do something that I didn't want to do and I wasn't going to do. And he tried to convince me with them, but Mom, what would Jesus do? And, you know, I wasn't buying it. And all of a sudden, just out of the clear blue, he gets this Charlie Manson stare on his face. I mean, it's like looking directly in the eyes of Satan.
Mm.
And he says, you wouldn't like me if you really knew the truth about my crime.
Mm.
And I said, well, what's worse than murder? Did you make her beg for her life, or did you torture her? And he said, well, you wouldn't like me if you knew the truth about my crime. And I said, I don't think there's anything worse than murder. And then, presto changeo, abracadabra, he's back to, but Mom, what would Jesus do? And immediately I thought about what Robert Hare said in Without Conscience, how a mother who had tortured and starved her children would say, oh, but I love my kids, but have no idea that loving kids meant feeding them and cleaning them.
Mm.
And it was like the light went on from Without Conscience, and I said, oh, my God. His brain does not know that going from one second of you wouldn't like me if you knew the real truth to, but Mom, what would Jesus do? And I realized that he was proud of it. Later, after he sent one of his ex-cellmates to infiltrate our family by renting a small house, rent house that I had, and the guy's purpose was to come up here and kill me and make it look like I had suicided.
Mm-hmm.
And I found out the guy was a pedophile and had been one of Patrick's cellmates. But, you know.
Well, Joyce, let me get into that in a minute, but I kind of wanted to get back to your point about the denial, and I just kind of wanted to get a feel for when you think that that started for you, and do you think it was this is something that's maybe you've been doing for quite a while, or did this just...
Oh, I've been doing it my whole life.
Can you think back when you first, like when I asked you the question about notice something had gone, you know, something was not right with him, it wasn't just when you were sitting in front of him in prison after he'd committed murder, right? Did
no,
you see signs
I,
of this?
I had seen the problems with him from the time he was 17, but I kept thinking, if I can just find, and this is denial too, it's mm-hmm. an excuse, if I could just think of the right words or bore a little hole in his skull and pour in some wisdom, I could get it across to him that he's ruining his life.
Okay, so sounds like you were trying to, at least in the initial stages, trying to help him then.
Sure, with that. I was trying to help him, but I was not willing to accept that he was not helpable. I was not willing to accept that he had no intention of going straight, that he enjoyed being the way he was. And I realize that now, and I look back, but it was so painful to me to realize that this child that was my golden boy is a monster.
Yeah.
You know, this is a kid who had every gifted and talented class there was in his school. He's a kid that scored in the 99.9th percentile in an IQ. Just absolutely could do anything in the world. And here he, you know, he chose to be a thug. And I didn't want to believe that. My mother, for a year, we went no contact with him. And after his Trojan horse that he sent into the family tried to kill my son Clay and had an affair with his wife, we went and we found the letters that I sent you a copy of, a bunch of them.
Right.
You know, and he was bragging in there. He was manipulating the psychiatrist and the psychologist at the prison to get what he wanted. although one PA did diagnose him as antisocial personality disorder.
Okay.
Did realize he was being manipulative, but he got away with a lot of his manipulations because he would tell the psychologist that he needed this or that housing place that he wanted to be rather than where they wanted him because his nephew died and he was just so heartbroken.
Right.
Well, the nephew he was talking about was his brother's wife's child that he had never met or never talked to or never corresponded with, but he was so broken up that he needed a housing change.
Right.
Well, there was 1% truth in that. He had a quote-unquote step-nephew that died. That was true. But the grief was a total fabrication.
And in terms of talking about denial, I wonder, too, how much of the mental health clinicians might go through some denial when they're faced with, like you say, these kind of information, bits of information, yet they still sort of try to accommodate a person like this without ultimately trying to conceptualize them as someone maybe like a psychopath. Yeah. And then one thing that came to my mind, Joyce, as you were talking, just to make it clear for the listeners, I mean, it's listening to this story as you tell it might make somebody think, oh, wow, you know, maybe Joyce has her own issues or maybe she's delusional or how can this be true? But this is all absolutely 100% documented.
Yeah, you got a copy of the documentation.
Right, right. So, you know, as crazy as it sounds,
when I went to a new psychologist, my husband burned to death in a plane wreck in 2004, and I got really bad PTSD from that because I was right there. And we have a little airport on our farm, and I went to this new psychologist and for some therapy, and he did this wonderful 2-hour intake. And at the time, my son David and I were living in an RV positioned on a lake because the Trojan horse psychopath that my son had sent to kill me was living with my mother as her live-in caregiver at the time, and I had to go into hiding.
Yeah.
And so I did this 2-hour intake interview with him crying about how my entire family is trying to kill me and they forced me out of my home. And at the end of the interview, he was so nice, and he said to me, I don't want to hurt your feelings or anything, but can you bring a witness or something? He thought I was a paranoid schizophrenic, and I sounded like one.
Right, 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 but I just wanted to clarify that. Listen, Joyce, we got to take a break. Can you hold on for another segment?
Sure.
Okay, Aftermath Radio, we'll be right back after this here on K-Beach.
Hi, my name is Bob, and I'm a psychopath.
Hi, Bob!
Bob!
Do you know what a psychopath is? Do you have one in your life? How would you know? Join Dr. Robert Shugg Mondays at 4 p.m. for Aftermath Radio and get the facts about psychopathy.
We're back, Aftermath Radio. Please do call us 562-912-3541, 562-912-3541. Skype us at aftermath.radio. Email us at aftermathradio@kbeach.com. We have on the line Joyce Alexander, who's a retired registered nurse practitioner. Her son Patrick is in a Texas prison for killing Jessica Witt, who was a 17-year-old girl. He killed her in cold blood. This was back in January of 1992. And Joyce is just telling us a little bit about kind of her experiences with the case, her experiences with her son, her experiences with denial, which I think is a very insightful position to take. And so, Joyce, you've alluded to this a couple of times about the Trojan horse and the guy that infiltrated your family. Why don't you give us the details on that now? Because I think that in and of itself is just fascinating.
Well, I had two rent houses. And one of them was very small and fairly cheap. And apparently Patrick told him I had written to Patrick and at some time or other about I was having difficulty renting it or whatever. But anyway, shortly after I had cut Patrick out completely, and there's also another little thing, is that our farm and airport is in a trust, and if I were to die before my mother does, Patrick gets half of the trust. If I outlive my mother, he gets nothing. So it was important for him that I die before my mother does.
Mm.
And she lives in a little house here on the same farm I do. Well, anyway, the Trojan horse was a pedophile and had spent, he was 40 years old and had spent 20 of it in prison for three separate child molestations. And that's the way I found out who he was, is a friend of mine who lives in Texas. I live in Arkansas. She actually found him on the Texas sexual offender list and sent me the picture because his picture was still up there. So I immediately tried to do something about it, but there wasn't anything I could legally do. And he had moved himself into my mother's house as her live-in caregiver, and I have no doubt that she was drugged during the time that he was there. And she gave him money and, took away my power of attorney and gave it to my daughter-in-law that he was having an affair with. I mean, they were setting it up so that they could take over the entire family as soon as they got rid of me. And if I hadn't, been able to have had my friends send me a copy of the Texas sex offender thing, I wouldn't have known a thing.
Mm.
I wouldn't have known a thing. And so, it just sounds so absurd. And when Patrick came up for parole this last time, I hired an attorney in Texas that is the best parole attorney if you're going to try to get out. But he knows what a psychopath is, and he refuses to work for one.
Mm.
And so, anyway, I called him and told him what I wanted, that I wanted to hire him, but I wanted to hire him to keep my son in prison, not get him out.
And just to interject here, like what Joyce is talking about is it wouldn't be uncommon necessarily to hire an attorney to help someone through parole, right?
Yeah,
to get out.
What the man does for a living. All he does. And he has a high success rate, about an 80% success
which,
rate.
Which, wow, that is high.
Yeah, he doesn't work for psychopaths. He knows what a psychopath is.
Right, and so now this is interesting. Where it's an interesting situation for you to be in where you've hired this same guy to keep your son in prison, which leads me to kind of a point we've come to before on the show having you on is, the idea, and you've spoke to this before about, how other folks would tell you sort of, how could you? You're his mother. Shouldn't you be helping him? And that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. If I had a dollar for everybody that has said, oh, you can't give up on him, he's your son, I'd be wealthy. And, it's this guilt. Well, he did the same thing. I would get mad at him, and I wouldn't write him for 6 months or send him commissary money. And he would send me a letter and play into that. But, Mom, I'm here by myself, and I don't have anything. I can't even buy an aspirin if I have a headache, And I would fall for it.
Yeah.
But eventually I realized when I saw he wasn't, I saw it. I mean, I looked in his eyes. And, even Bob Hare talks about the look, that psychopathic look, that stare, that you're looking into the eyes of Satan look.
Right.
And the best I can have ever seen a picture of it is the picture of Charlie Manson.
I've seen that picture.
When he had first been arrested.
Yeah.
That famous picture.
Mm-hmm.
That's the look.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, listen, Joyce, we got about a minute left. Any advice that you could give? I mean, most folks don't have anywhere near this type of story, but still, it sounds like you might have some words of wisdom for other folks out there going through something similar.
When people are manipulative, when people don't display honesty, don't trust them. I'm to the point now that when I see the first sign of dishonesty in anybody, I don't care who it is, I'm done with them. Mm-hmm. I don't do business with them. I don't have them in my personal, intimate circle. And as far as people getting out of prison, I know there's a few people who get out of prison and go straight, but I would never take a chance. I can't remember his name now. Keith Keel, is that the way you say his
name? It's Kent Keel, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He was talking about the average PCLR score for the prisoners is 22.
Mm-hmm.
So statistically, the chance of a prisoner being a nice guy, whether he's a psychopath or not, are pretty bad. So I wouldn't have anything to do with anybody who has a prison record.
And then maybe that...
Than jaywalking.
Well, maybe too, maybe paying attention to the denial as well, to kind of bring it back to that. Yeah. If we find ourselves doing that, maybe try to get more at the root of what's going on. Joyce,
you know, denial is one of those things you don't know what you don't know.
Exactly. And it's a safer place to be for some people.
Yeah, and it's not a good place to be long term.
No, it really isn't. Well, Joyce, we got to let you go. Thanks so much for coming through for us. Oh no, thank you so much for coming through for us. We really do appreciate it, and we'll have you on again soon in the future. Then.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay.
Bye
bye. That was pretty smooth, that transition there.
Was
There's
it?
No doubt.
Oh, I know.
What do you guys think of that story? It's,
every single time she is on the show, I gasp at something she says.
Yeah.
Every single time.
Yeah.
And it's...
Yeah, there's just so many layers to it. And
yes.
It's all just incredible.
Yeah.
I did want to say before we go, I got an email. And this email says, okay, the last time I was online, you had the distinguished Dr. Hare as a guest. I wanted to ask him about the language and continuity he mentioned in his book, Without Conscience, and if this differs if the psychopath is a highly educated man. The one who ruined me could charm the venom out of a snake, avoiding the poison dripping out, and do it in two languages.
Wow.
Yeah, all he said... turned out to be lies and very inconsistent with his behavior, but his verbal fluency was remarkable. So now I'm confused after reading Dr. Hare's book. Can you comment? And I believe I can, but I sort of ran out of time. I want to give this one a little bit more attention. So emailer, I'll do this first thing on the next show, which will be in 2 weeks.
And
then if you want to email me any more information, I would certainly love to read it. But we do appreciate you writing in. I will get to this first thing next show. That being said, remember, next week we're out for spring break, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're back in 2 weeks with Dr. Tracy Tolbert talking about juvenile psychopathy. And you guys got any plans for spring break? Or you just got back from New York City.
Thesis.
There you go. Do something scholarly. In the meantime, you can always leave us voicemails at 562-912-3541. You can Skype us at aftermath.radio. Again, leaving voicemails and email us at aftermathradio@kbeach.com. Go to our website, aftermathradio.org. All of our podcasts are up there for you to listen to anytime, day or night. Until the next show, be safe and stay away from psychopaths. Yeah?
Yep.
Okay. Dr. Robert Shug, Aftermath Radio, here on KBeach.
You've been listening to Aftermath Radio, production of the KBeach radio station at California State University, Long Beach. Produced in association with AftermathSurvivingPsychopathy.org. Your host has been Dr. Robert Shug. Your producers have been Brian Frederick, Chantel Fahmy, and Gurjeet Brar. Join us next Monday at 4 p.m. for another exciting episode.
If you or someone you know has been victimized and you'd like to talk to someone, call the Cal State Long Beach Counseling and Psychological Services number at 562-985-4001.